Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Coming up, Storm Babbitt rips up the fixture card. Celtic go to war with the Green Brigade. The Ultras are locked out of away games. And 1 year on from VAR, we ask, has it been a success? Welcome, Scottish football fans. It's another episode of the Scottish Football Show. I am your host, Andrew Slavin, and joining me, as always, senior producer at TNT and Scottish media legend, Laura Brannan. Hello, Laura.
Hello. Legend is quite extreme, Andrew. I don't know if I'd go that far. Although, when I was in Seville, I actually got spotted for, you know, that video that Copa 90 did during the Euros. So this guy came up to me randomly and went, "Are you that girl that's in shape being Scottish?" And I'm looking at him going, "Hey, I am in that video. I have never been recognised for something like that because I'm an absolute nobody." And that was quite strange. And it took me quite a minute to twig what he was actually on about. So, yeah, it was odd.
Well, Laura, if you would stop talking, I could introduce our next guest, Finlay Marks, Melbourne's head of creative. Finn, are you tired of listening to Laura and her telling everyone she's famous now?
Wow.
Not in the slightest, no.
She got noticed once and now she's like, "Oh, I've been on TV and everything."
No, Laura's Scottish football Twitter royalty. She's got about a billion followers. So, yeah,
Laura can see what she wants. I'm not comfortable with this conversation.
Exactly.
I'm going to just switch my camera off for the rest of the podcast so no one can see me now.
Funnily enough, I will tell you a story back when we were doing the Totally Show, Laura. I think it was after a year. I was in Greens in Dumfries, the pub, and I was chatting to like a wee brother, like my pal, when I was growing up. Wee brother, he was like, "Oh, Andrew, how's it going?" Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, "Nice one, blah, all good." So, and then his mate next to him, who wasn't saying anything, was like, "Do you do a podcast?" And I was like, "Yeah." And his mate just said, "Yeah, this is Andrew Slavin. He does the total." He was like, "Oh my!" turns out he was a trucker, and all his mates used to listen to the podcast. Please. He's like, "I'm phoning him right now, telling who's in the pub." Like, all right, man, I think it was probably our whole listenership was all those truckers.
Are you the most famous person that's been in Greens and Dumfries though before, Andrew? Is that like
Calvin Harris?
Does he frequent there quite often in between trips around the world, you know, DJing at Ibiza and going out with Taylor Swift and all that? So you're like choking for a beer, I'm just going to go down to Greens, if that's all right.
Oh, I'm trying to think. Frank McAvenny was in there a few years ago.
That's pretty good.
I think there must be a few more.
I always love, do you ever do those, like, you know, random road trips or something around Scotland if you're away day, or I don't know, somebody's getting married or something at the arse end of the country, and you go into those like little chippies or Indian restaurants and the wall's just covered with like the famous people that have been in there over the last like 30 years. Yeah. And, you know, that kind of like sunlight stained pale blue kind of thing that you get in barbershop windows where all the pictures are faded. But it's that kind of thing. And it's like, "Rod Stewart came in here for a curry after a gig in 1987. It's like the highlight of their time as a restaurant. I love those wee things. So you see them. The best ones are like, if you go into a chippy, which is like, why have you got a camera just at the ready? Like, should some random celebrity come in? And then you take the time to print them all off and put them around. Yeah, those are awesome.
Okay, let's kick things off how we normally do. So with some funnies. Who's going to go first? Finn? Finn, you go first. What have you got for me?
There wasn't a huge amount of funny stuff, sadly, going on at the weekend, mostly because there was no football really going on at the weekend. But one of the games that did go ahead in the lower leagues produced, I think, one of the finest photographs in Scottish football for a long time. In the Stirling Albion v Falkirk game, some of the Bairns fans were winding up the Stirling players to the point where the captain actually made a gesture to try and get somebody removed from the stand, like they were a heckler at a comedy gig or something like that. And there's just this fantastic shot of the guy that he's remonstrating with, giving him a bit back. And it's just like this classic Scottish footba da, with the Vicky's being flicking up at him. But what makes the photograph, the composition so good, is that right behind him, there's like two old boys absolutely pissing themselves laughing at the confrontation going on. It's just a magnificent picture. Maybe try and put it out on our Instagram or something, but it's fantastic.
It's the classic, as soon as the player turns round and isn't looking at him, that's when he does it. That's it. You know, it's so like no shame at all. I walk away. It's like that thing, it's like, yeah, walk away. Walk away as you walk away.
I also just liked that it was the V. Like, it's a lesser spotted, I'd say, now. People tend to go for the much more aggressive True. Middle finger, or, you know, the wanker sign or something like that, or just a very aggressive point at them while they're swearing expletives at them. But I just liked that it was a good old-fashioned V and a grumpy face. I also quite liked as well, very close by, there's a small child just witnessing all of that happening, and it just... It took me back to when I was a young man going to the football, 12, 13 years old, and what an education that served as to some of the incredible vocabulary of Scottish swear words we've got in our lexicon as a nation. Because I heard things at the football I had never heard in my life up until that point before.
And you would never repeat.
No.
Laura, what have you got for me?
Do you see Stenhouse Muir's novelty top? So this...
The jobby top.
Love it. This stemmed from Barcelona putting out a collab with the Stones, and their sponsor was the Stones logo, the tongue hanging out. Yeah. So in response to this, they did a joke and they put now their sponsor is Lock Hire. Now, I am not on what Lock Hire do, but I assume they make portaloos, because instead of having the word, they've put an actual image of a portaloo on their strip. A few people liked to tweet and they went and just saw the pound signs in their eyes, basically, and said, okay, we're going to make this, and then put it on sale. So... I'm joking, maybe going a little bit too far, but in all fairness to them, they are putting all the profits to charity, so fair play to them.
Brilliant. I thought it was class. Stenhouse Muir are such a brilliant club for that. They're really switched on in their local community and trying to do things that they can do to help around. So it's really cool. Warriors in the Community is the club charity, and they're absolutely brilliant. So that was really class to see. Actually looks quite smart. I think it looks pretty good. The graphic design's all right on the kit. So yeah.
The dogs bark and the caravan passes. The caravan keeps moving. The caravan keeps going.
Right, let's wrap up some news that's been going on in the last couple of days. Of course, we didn't really get much time to look back on Scotland's 4-1 defeat against France, but at least we took a one-goal lead and had a nice ole 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 in Paris. That's a good laugh.
For a whole 5 minutes.
Yeah, fuck it. But a few things have happened. Obviously, Andy Robertson is now, you know, off for surgery for his shoulder. Doesn't look like he's going to be back until the new year. That obviously means he's going to miss the games against Georgia and Norway. I wonder if Angus Gunn, I don't know what the latest is with him, because I know he's got an injury, a groin injury. Never fun. But what else? What else has been going on?
Do you know what? I think it's just worth noting that off the back of the France game, it's something that me and Finn especially have talked about a lot in this show, is just how good it was to see Liam Kelly and Xander Clark finally get their caps that night. Long, long overdue, and it was very good to see.
Now, hold on. Right, now, I'm not going to put it in a negative spin, but like, is it just a nice thing after we've qualified? Or do you think if we hadn't qualified, they would have got there?
No, I think it's both a nice and a good thing, because it was exactly what we were asking Steve Clarke to do ahead of the friendly, which is forget the scoreline, whatever happens, use it to test the squad, rotate the squad. What was really nice is that Steve Clarke did do that, and he gave starts to the likes of Lewis Ferguson and Liam Kelly. I was like, great, it's good to see these players in. What was rubbish just on the other side, which didn't help, was that France clearly didn't get the memo and started a side basically as if they were going into a World Cup final. We were like, mate, come on, we're all half cut here, like still from the night before having qualified.
We never saw any celebrations, did we?
There was one video that got leaked. I don't know who filmed it, if it was a fan, just in it seemed to be in a nightclub somewhere. I don't know where, but it was in Glasgow, because I then saw photos of them in Blue Lagoon, a couple of them getting there.
Oh, I did see that.
Was it a 3M
Xander
chippy
Clark
or something?
Was getting a chippy, wasn't he?
I think John McGinn was there as well. So,
controversial outcome. Nice. I don't like a Blue Lagoon.
It's fine.
Not a fan.
It's fine. It does the job, but I think most people would have their own preference to a standalone chippy wherever you are. But you know, sometimes needs must. If you're getting the last train back from Glasgow Central, you know, I mean, the queues is always stayed out. But yeah, it's fine. It's serviceable, but I agree with you. It's nowhere near the best chippy. It's always your local chippy, isn't it?
Fish supper, sausage supper, haggis supper, a black pudding supper.
See, I go for a single because I don't. I'm not big on chips.
What?
Yeah.
What? You're no big on chips.
Are you even Scottish? Like, what?
It's not really. It's just not really. I know that's weird. It's a bit controversial.
Do you like roast tatties?
Yeah, I'll take that on Christmas Day.
I'll take that.
curly fries. I'll take curly fries. You know, like good old fifth year at high school lunch.
Kind of like Cajun, box of curly Cajun fries. Chips, like peri peri chips from Nando's or something.
I'll take it. It's not my first choice.
Wow.
Yeah.
You must have been the worst Wayne in the world. Like, every parent like just gives their Wayne chips on the side when it's at least they're three or whatever. When my daughter started eating chips, I was just like, oh, man, she's always going to have a good full belly now. That's glad. I don't know what that makes it. No, oh, you don't eat chips. Wow. Sorry, this podcast has went to it's a food city, but there you go. Hooligan, not a fan.
There's just on the choice of supper, there's something that you don't really get in Glasgow. And because my mum's side of the family's from the East Coast, so we would go through there every now and again, you know, holidays and breaks and stuff like that. And there's something that's much more of an East Coast thing, which is a white pudding supper, which is absolutely phenomenal.
Really?
It's kind of like stuffing, but really meaty.
Aye.
And deep fried oatmeal and meat and that. I don't really know what's in it, but it's absolutely fantastic. I'm just looking at the photograph though. Do you think it would make sense if they introduced at Blue Lagoon specific? I just thought about this with John McGinn going in to get a fish supper.
I know where you're going.
A meatball supper. Surely that's got to be a thing for Scotland fans, no? I'd be up for a marinara supper, like deep fried meatballs with tomato sauce on it. Oh.
Mixed sauce and chips.
Salt and mixed sauce, surely, for the
of course.
Edinburgh folks.
The Edinburghers, love it. Right, let's move from the kitchen to the front lines. Because...
From the frying pan into the fire, one might say.
Oh, wow. Oh. Check you out. So we're going from something fun to something quite serious now. But the Green Brigade, everyone, have been banned from away games. So Celtic's ultras are no longer going to be seen at away matches. It's a weird one, this, really. So Celtic, basically, they've suspended away ticket allocations of the Green Brigade, meaning that it's about 200 fans are going to be locked out of all upcoming away games. They say it's due to recent trouble away to Feyenoord for using pyro, and at Motherwell, I think, as well, from Russian turnstiles. So it's nothing really to do with any of the recent politics between the whole Palestine stuff, because Celtic fans are quite common to use Palestinian flags. But it's a weird one, really. Are you guys can understand this from a Celtic point of view? I know Celtic fans are not happy about it.
Two different things for me. I think they're two very different incidents that, firstly, the pyro in Rotterdam. I think we all kind of know where I stand on that. Yes, mm-hmm. The club take the fine for it, but I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And I don't think fans should be getting banned for it. I think that's a very dangerous precedent to set. If you start banning fans for using it, we should be looking at how we can use it safely and introduce ways to actually include it in our game, not just ban fans from using it. It's just not the way forward. There's pyro used all through the world, mm-hmm. and this is not the route to take. That's not how you solve the problem. It's just by saying you're not allowed. So mm-hmm. that side of things, absolutely, completely wrong, and I absolutely disagree with that. The other punishment is for the Motherwell rushing of the turnstiles. This was ridiculous what happened. This was a couple of weeks ago. The fans were trying to open the fire exits to let in fans who didn't have tickets. So fans got in. It was overpopulated in the away end. That does need to be addressed. I don't think you can put it on a certain group of supporters and blame them primarily. I think you need to look at a lot of different factors in that and who was involved, including the police themselves, because I don't think they were innocent in this. So yes, tackle that in a certain way. Again, I don't think the answer is just banning a certain group of fans. I think when you target one set group, which we all know has been quite controversial in terms of the Celtic statement saying we're not a political club, yet we know that the Green Brigade make political statements. So there's obviously a little bit of unrest there. And this is not a new thing. There's been unrest there for years and years now. Mm-hmm. But to do the timing of it is a bit suspect. And for me, just targeting one group is just not the right way about this, because you're not going to win. I don't, there's not really going to be a solution out of this.
Well, especially when you have, I mean, Celtic as a football club have always celebrated the Green Brigade. You've had in the past Neil Lennon, you know, when he won the first league trophy under his tenure, he took the trophy straight to them and put it and planked it on the pitch and stuff like that. So like you have a really difficult relationship, and it's not a good one to have if the club is punishing its own fans, even though there could be an element of legitimacy towards it. But dialogue has to be the way forward. So I see what you're saying, Laura.
I think it's kind of, I agree with you, it's quite a dangerous thing to do, because it also just instantly turns the Green Brigade into the martyrs in the situation, because they're being banned. And it's like, I think if you dealt with it like an adult problem and it's based on communication, so you've representatives from the Green Brigade and the club that sit down and try and talk about these things or resolutions. And I completely agree as well. I think you can't just pin everything that you don't like about sections of your support or whatever on one specific faction. Also as well, because the Green Brigade, for better or for worse, like everybody will have an opinion on it, but you can argue that they bring colour, noise, they add something to the atmosphere, to the games. Mm-hmm. Again, regardless of your own political affiliation, it's I think kind of cool seeing fan groups either way taking a stand and trying to vocalise sentiments of their support to the outside world. And the Green Brigade in particular are a fan group that are known not just in Scotland, not just in the UK, but like worldwide. Mm-hmm. And you see displays and things that happen at Parkhead or at Ibrox with the Union Bears or different fan groups around the country being picked up by, you know, people that are fans of that kind of ultras culture in Europe and the wider world, and they're celebrated for that. So if you turn these people into martyrs for what they're doing, it just exacerbates this dysfunctional relationship between clubs and supporter bases anyway, even further. So I don't see what the positives are out of this, how this kind of does anything but aggravate what's already a fairly tense situation.
Interestingly, Brendan Rodgers was quoted, I think over the weekend, saying that the SFA, or the SPFL, sorry, should come in with like a kind of like 5% of away fans should be allowed at every ground or something like that. Just make a stamp on it. Don't make it a certain amount of away allocation for this game and that game or whatever. It's just straight down the line, this is what the allocation is for all clubs. What do you think of that, Laura?
Yeah, this goes off the back of Hearts reducing their allocation. Obviously, Celtic were away at Tynecastle this weekend, so I suspect that's why this question's came around again. It is something that we've talked about before, that we do need a minimum percentage in terms of away allocation. 5% is what they use for UEFA matches, so any European fixtures, international fixtures, and it works. On the flip side of that, it means that Celtic would have to give up about, 3,000 yeah. of their seats to the away end, which when you've got the likes of Ross County and such like making big journeys like that, they're not going to take 3,000 fans for the game against Celtic. So it's then becomes a question of, do they participate because they obviously don't want those empty seats lying there, or is that actually a positive for the away team because they're reducing, obviously, the allocation and it goes in their favour? Like I've said from the start, I think it should be a 5% and you've just got to live with it. And you could apply the same rule to what you do for cup finals at Hampden, where you give them that and then if they don't want it, they can hand it back. Police it that way, I guess. But yeah, it's I think what Rodgers has come out and said is absolutely fair.
The full-time whistle at Ibrox. Philippe Clement gets the winning start, he asked, of his players. No magic stick involved, but Rangers conjured up four goals. Rangers 4, Hibernian 0.
Okay, quickly rounding up the rest of the SPFL action, because there wasn't a lot. We'll start with Rangers 4-0 win over Hibs, and it was obviously Philip Clement's first game in charge, and ended in a comfortable victory. Must have been a happy lad, Finn, to see things go like that.
It's a brilliant start. You can't get much better than that as a start. I think especially knowing that you're coming up against a Hibs side that do look much better organised under Nick Montgomery. That's his first defeat in charge. What was really nice to see was the intent and the intensity that was there behind a lot of Rangers play, and just very basic tactical stuff that looks like it was very quickly rectified from the mess that kind of Michael Beale left behind. There was maybe something that you'd said, Laura, about Hibs just looked terrible, but I think it was actually more a tactical repositioning from Rangers to very quickly close down the way that Hibs were playing. So Hibs like playing out from the back, and I think they noticed this and they were just like, well, don't let them be very in their faces, high intensity pressing. And that's where Rangers got all the joy in the second half as it went on. Yeah. So there's obviously, leading to his press conference, he's not Harry Potter with a magic wand. He can't just wave his wand and things change.
Because he looks like Voldemort more than Harry Potter.
he should not be named. But as things go, I think it was all... Most Rangers fans, I think, went into the game with trepidation, knowing that they were facing a good Hibs side. They just wanted to see a good performance, even over a scoreline. And I think they got both. So there's a lot there to build on. Obviously, it's very early days, but encouraging signs at the start for Clement.
What about the kind of rumour, or maybe news by the time people are hearing this, that Graham Souness could be back in an advisory role at Rangers?
Well, I think he's obviously somebody that's very well known and has kind of worked in vaguely ambassadorial things before with the club.
Well, he was offered an ambassador role, which he refused, I think, probably because he wants a higher role.
I think it's more to do with something in a more ad hoc role, because I think if you're an ambassador, you're at club functions and doing things all the time. And I think now that he's not doing his punditry, I think he wants the freedom to be able to come in and do stuff. Interestingly, he was part of how involved he was at all stages, I'm not too sure, but he was part of the committee in helping interview and speak to candidates around the Rangers job just recently. It kind of makes sense, but it's somebody that knows the pressures of what it is to be the Rangers manager and has an incredible pedigree in the game, both as a player and as a manager. So I think it'll be a good thing if he's involved with the club in some sort of advisory role in doing that. It can't be a bad thing to have people with that level of expertise and knowledge and background being involved in the decision-making process at a club.
Kilmarnock got their second win of the season. The first game against Rangers on the opening day, so it's been a long wait for Kelly fans. They beat Livingston 3-1 at Rugby Park, but interestingly, David Martindale said in his post-match that Kyle Vassell, who got a brace in this game, reminded him of Lyndon Dykes when he was with the Lions, which is interesting, considering I think Vassell is much older than Lyndon Dykes.
Has he got any Scottish family anywhere hidden away, Vassell?
He certainly travelled. The boy's got numerous clubs. Numerous. But yeah, really good result for Kilmarnock, who've, you know, they've beaten Rangers and Celtic this season, but they just haven't racked up the league points that they require. But speaking of Celtic, easy street for them against Hearts at Tynecastle, 4-1. Celtic emphatic at the moment and just seem to be getting better and better. So it's eight wins out of their nine league games so far. It looks pretty hard to see anyone turn that around. But you never know. Elsewhere, Laura, Dundee United absolutely smashed Partick Thistle 5-0 in one of the very few games that happened lower down the leagues.
Yeah, so Dundee United, they've moved 4 points clear at the top of the Championship. It was an absolute rout on Partick Thistle. As much as we absolutely love the Championship and how tight it is every year, I just feel like this year they're just going to be a wee bit too strong. And it's going to be a competition between the best of the rest this year. I think it's just going to be let United run away with it. I think, see, you just look at their squad. They've got a Premiership team. Like, you look at the likes of Declan Gallagher, Tony Watt, Louis Moult, and Grimshaw, Middleton, Sibbald. I mean, they are very much just down, I think, temporarily. They're going to come back up again. And yeah, look, fair play to them. They did well. I think Thistle just they had the sending off and their heads just went. And it was just collapse mode after that. There was something, Andrew, you pointed out, there was no matchday tickets available on the day of the game, which I think is a kind of common problem we find in our game right now. That you could get them online, but you couldn't get them in person. And I don't know if this is just away-end tickets, but that, especially away-end tickets, has become a problem. You see a few clubs saying, you have to get them by 12 o'clock, or you have to get them by Friday, close of play. And it's like, what are we doing to our game? Why are we not encouraging fans to be able to go at 5 to 2? Yeah, I'm going to go out the house. I'm going to walk up to the stadium around the corner because there's nothing else to do, and just pay at the gate. Certain people of a certain age won't know how to buy tickets on their phone and might just be in the facility and actually go, yeah, I'm going to go as a neutral or whatever. We're just not doing anything to help ourselves, are we?
I completely agree with you. I just think it's also in a culture where so many of the clubs are so reticent for their games to be broadcast so that they don't lose out on match day ticket sales and revenues. When you then make it so difficult for supporters, as you're saying, almost on a whim to rock up and buy a ticket, it just seems so counterintuitive. We just don't help ourselves so much of the time.
Totally agree, completely. Ayr United in the Championship, they got their first back-to-back, well, they completed first back-to-back wins of the season. It was a 1-0 away win against Dunfermline. Ayr move up to 6. Yeah, there's not a lot of football going on because we have to go straight down to League Two and talk about Brian McLean, who got the sack at Clyde. They lost 3-2 to Bonnyrigg Rose. They're ninth in the table, 1 point off bottom, and they've only got one win this season, which I think was actually against Rock Bottom Elgin.
I just love how you say McLean as McLean.
I know. What was it? It was Stephen McLean as well.
Did Kenny McLean up against Norway?
That is. There are so jokes in this world. There are jokes in this world that if you're going to slag me off, make the jokes good. But I am holding on to it. Well, I'm clutching at straws. What can I say?
You think I'm going to answer a stupid question like that?
Okay, it was a year ago on Saturday when VAR made its Scottish football debut. Can you remember the game though? It was Hibs versus St Johnstone at Easter Road, and hee-haw happened. It came after 3 years of planning and testing, and we were all warned it would have teething problems. But 1 year on, has it been the success the SPFL and SFA had hoped for? This time, well, 12 months ago, we spoke to former referee Des Roach, now from Get Involved Referee podcast. So who better to get back on the show and give us his thoughts on how the last year has gone? Des, thanks for joining us, pal. You said last year we're all moving with the times, you know, the introduction of VAR. You know, it wasn't a great time for it to be introduced, you know, midway through a season. Do you think you still stand by that opinion? Do you think it was still a little bit, you know, wild to do such a thing?
I think, yeah, I do. And I still hold the opinion that you're bringing in a piece of technology that's going to turn around the way the game's played, and people get decisions in August, September that they don't now get in November, December. And those points, thankfully, it didn't seem to contribute to any one team's major failings. But you are changing the landscape massively. My opinion at the time, they rushed it in too quickly without addressing potential teething problems. Yeah, I think that was proven, and it was proven in a number of occasions throughout the season last year. The guys that are operating it, they don't want to get it wrong. They want to get everything you can possibly right. Yes, the technology is there to use it, but come on, make sure it's up and running and the guys operating it are there so that you're getting not just you're not just getting the high, you're getting, there's really no excuse for you not to get the major decisions right if this technology is there to be used correctly.
Just in general then, looking at the year, before we delve into the kind of the nitty gritty of it all, do you think it has been quite a straightforward process, obviously with its few kind of flaws along the way, or do you think it's just been full of controversy and it's just been a kind of nightmare of a year? What's your kind of take on it?
I would say, I wouldn't say it's been a controversy. A car crash and all that. It's came in, we've had expected teething problems. It has made contributions to games, but it has been proven that they've got decisions correct. And that's what it's there for. There have been the other occasions where we've just not known why that decision was reached. it is now an expectation almost amongst the supporters that as soon as the referee is called across to go to the monitor, then he will be changing his decision. And that's not the way it should be operating. You can get the advice from the VAR official at the central base, but the referee should still be have the courage of his own convictions. And if the on-field referee is seeing it in a different manner, then I would like to see them continue to challenge it and say, no, I'm happy to stay. But football's a game of skill and error. Players make mistakes, referees make mistakes. But we just hope we iron it out and we're not making the same mistakes and we're getting less and less as we go on. But as an introduction, yes, great idea. Operationally, I think it could have been a little bit more smoothly run out.
That is one thing I was actually going to ask, was looking back, I can't personally remember any from watching games myself. Maybe you guys maybe remember specific instances, but has the ref ever went to the monitor and actually decided to keep his original decision? Because if it has happened, it's very few and far between, isn't it?
There have been a few, yeah. Willie Collum, I think, was the first one to do it at Ibrox last year. And there have been a few other ones, not many. I would say maybe only less than 5% of calls are ever gone against. But I still think the referee on the play, if he's got a solid view of it and a solid feeling for it, mm-hmm. I would take a lot of persuading me to change my mind.
Do you think, Des, in Scotland specifically, that we as football fans, do you think we dwell too much on like individual incidents like all the time? Like, there's so much focus on it that we're basically just desperate for some clarity a lot of the time.
Yeah, you think that's football fans in Scotland, Spain, Sweden, wherever you want in the world.
Yeah,
they want to have no fouls go against their own team, no goals go against their own team, no conspiracies against their own team. That's just the way it is. But with relation to your question, I think we can get too focused on one thing. Do you know what? If mistakes happened, forget it. Move on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Move on to the next incident. It's like if you lose a goal, you're only one down. You can still come back and win 2-1, get a draw, etc. If a referee makes a mistake, he's making it honestly, and I genuinely mean that. He's made an honest mistake, and he's then got to get that out of his mind to go and get the next decision correct.
Because I've always thought with VAR, a lot of people hate it because it takes so long, or they hate it because they say it's ruining the game or whatever. And very early on, they were saying it will ruin the conversation in the pub. But the fact that things still get wrong and that we're still talking about it now, it's just added another dynamic to the game, if anything. Do you agree?
Yeah, it's just added another layer to the cake that's Scottish football, isn't it? We've just got to work our way through another tier. But like anything, it's here to stay. It's not going away. We just need to make sure that we're operating it better. And I'm sorry, but we are going to get natural breaks in play. If there's a goal that has to be checked, or if there's a particular game match incident that has to be checked, it is getting a bit Americanized. But we've just got to make sure these are a lot slicker, and we're not taking 3 minutes to say, right, that goal actually counts now, so you can go and celebrate, and it takes another minute to get the game started. The free flowing of it would be a far better operational use.
That is one of the things that, I mean, I've been quite vocal. I just don't like it in general. And I'm very much on the kind of emotional supporter side of things. So I'm quite interested to know, Des, what you're thinking from a more like logical and referee and professional perspective. Firstly, it's the time it takes. Crawford Allen was talking this week about implying that 3 minutes was actually quite quick, which surprised me, because 3 minutes waiting is like an absolute lifetime when you're in that moment. So that's one thing that bugs me the most. The other thing is, I feel like we're dwelling too much on the absolute intricacies of fouls and incidents, to the point where we're not actually considering, is this clear and obvious? We're trying to strip it all the way back, all the layers down, to get an actual scientific answer, when actually it wasn't clear and obvious. So why are we even dwelling on it? So I'm interested to know, are we right in doing that? Or should we kind of relax a little bit?
I think the first thing I need to address there right from the top is, not many folk call me logical if you talk to my friends and family. So I'll take that as a massive compliment. And certainly not a lot of folk that see me refereeing, they always wondered where I was plucking my ideas from. Regarding the time that it takes, now, when any goal is scored, they obviously have to check that it's valid. Then they have to check there's not been any foul play in the lead up to it, the attacking player pathway. I understand that there is a tremendous amount of discussion going on in the VAR room. It's not just the referee or the VAR referee and the VAR assistant referee. There's somebody there who's shown the clips. There's an observer. They're asking to see which view they want of the six cameras that are there. They're then having to talk to the match official on the ground and say, can you go across and have a look? Or we are potentially looking at something. It may be nothing. So 3 minutes may seem a long time. And I agree. I think it's a long time if I'm watching football. But I do think we have to appreciate just the amount of work that's going on in a very, very condensed piece of time to make sure that the outcome is right, particularly goals, because that's what we're all there to see. Regarding the clear and obvious decisions and the clear and obvious errors, I'm very much of the opinion that if you're having to look at something 4, 5, 6 times and having to get that line drawn across to see if someone's front part of their big toe is offside, that's not clear and obvious. I mean, we've seen things that have been missed. See, if I'm getting told, wait, all right, we're checking another angle, you're checking another angle, then it's not clear and obvious to the person who's operating the machinery that's got the best view. So to me, that's inconsequential. That should be just, nope, let's go, let's get the game going again, because all it's doing is just causing frustration and causing, not animosity, but you can feel the people in the crowd going, what's going on? Can somebody just tell us? And that's what I would quite like. The referees sometimes seems to be mic'd up and to hear it. Seeing yes. What has been spoken about here. Don't get me wrong, a lot of the time it might need to be checked before it would go out, but I would like to see more explanation of why a decision was given, because the fans are paying their money to watch it in the crowd and they don't know. It could be just that all they get is possible penalty check. They could maybe come up with another something at the bottom of it and explain what it is, or the referee could even maybe say what it is, penalty kick, holding, or no penalty, no contact, ball outside penalty area. Just something that maybe tightens it up, that gives people more of an understanding of what's actually going on. I think that would be maybe not something that would be too unreasonable.
I think that would definitely be something that would have been valued by Scotland fans watching the Spain game the other week.
Yes.
If we'd been told exactly what happened. I'm glad you mentioned the thing about making up officials, because I think it leads into a slightly broader question about the way that referees at the moment they can't communicate their decisions or why they did something. Do you think that that's something that would actually alleviate maybe a bit of the tension, animosity, I'm not quite sure what the right word is, between, you know, the kind of fraternity of referees and football supporters, when they do have the space to talk about the decisions that they've made or why they've done it, whether that is a moment in game or more likely after the fact, you know, post-match, if they were to do an interview or sit down with an analysis team like on Sportscene or whatever. Do you think that that's something that could be a good way of improving potentially the relationship between officials and supporters?
Yes, completely agree with that. However, we did have a precedent about 15 years ago, maybe 20 years ago, where the SFA had a specific area on their website that referees could explain a decision they'd given at the weekend. It tended to be always the negative side. They got a penalty wrong, they got a player sent off wrong, it's been a yellow. And it actually became more of a hindrance, because all it was every week, referees saying sorry.
Yeah.
And you don't get very rarely, but you do get a manager or a player coming out and saying, oh yeah, it was Lon Shankland, he missed 3 clear opportunities today, so that's hurt my team. That doesn't happen on the other side of the fence. But I do know, and I think it would need to be managed in such a way that I do know that a lot of the referees would like the opportunity to speak or to be able to give a comment or to maybe, I don't know, have it within a report, the reason why such and such was given. And I think most minded and sane football fans would appreciate it. They don't have to agree with it, but they would appreciate the honesty of the referee saying, well, do you know what, I didn't see that penalty incident because there was 8 players in the box, the goalkeeper jumped up and somebody got pushed at the back post. That's where, if VAR picks that up, that'd be ideal to turn and say, penalty for Hibernian, number 4, holding jersey, yellow card, red card, whatever the sanction may be, players restart, penalty to Hibs. But I wouldn't use it as a tool for every foul that you're given in a game. That wouldn't happen. But I think potential major errors, major incidents during a game and after a game, if it was managed properly, I think Scottish fans would be amenable to that. And I think the journalists would be amenable to it as well.
They would
love it.
Just as a kind of final question to sum up, Des, and you can be as candid as you want to be. But the kind of general question is, as a former referee and what I'm watching football, are you a fan of VAR? Do you think it helps the officiating standard in games? Not necessarily maybe just in Scotland, but kind of in the wider footballing world. Because I think in general, you know, you see instances of this coming in, like the whole debacle around the Tottenham-Liverpool game earlier this season, which obviously gets more and garners more attention because of it's England, so it goes all over the world. But from my perspective, it doesn't seem to have made the game infinitely better. Like it's not catching a percentage of decisions that might not have been caught anyway exponentially greater. But it is, as Laura maybe alluded to earlier, sacrificing a lot of the enjoyment of the in-stadium experience of fans. And I'm just wondering, from a kind of more refereeing point of view, and you don't have to be specific in people that you might know or whatever in the kind of refereeing circles, but do you think in general video assistant refereeing is good for the game? Or is it something that it's here, so you've kind of got to work with it? Would you actually prefer it to go back to the way it was, where we didn't rely on technology so much to try and help us officiate the games?
Certainly wasn't aware of it in the Scotland-Spain game 2 weeks ago. Lay my hat firmly on that one. I was rather perplexed. I'm not going to take the sitting in the fence approach. I'll give him an opinion. VAR has come in. It's all around the world. If we want to be seen as a nation and we're going to the Europeans, if we didn't use VAR in our country, we wouldn't even be eligible to qualify for these major competitions, because we've got to be operating at the highest level. Mm-hmm. If we didn't use VAR, our referees wouldn't receive major European appointments. Now, I know a lot of them are not getting the biggest games anymore, but there are teams regularly going out. So if our guys weren't using that in the top league, we wouldn't have any representation in Europe. Also, I think because of the league systems and European competitions, after you get to a certain stage, VAR must be available in your stadium as well. So that would then backtrack to the teams losing out. There has just so much been invested in this that I don't see it going. I don't see it going. It has to be here, and it has to be here to stay. It has to get better. And because back to everything, you'll only get better by using it more, getting the proper training and experiences of using it before you go to a match. So this is up and running. England had their teething problems. We're experiencing our teething problems. Would I like to see it go back to just the four guys on the pitch? Probably yes, because I think the fan experience is being slowed up quite a lot, and I count myself as a football fan. You're wanting to see, right, why did it happen? What's happening next? How long is it taking? So I can see the fan experience and element of joy almost sort of a little bit removed. But my knowledge of it is that it's here to stay, guys. It's here to stay, and we just have to put up with it. But more an experience. I'm not as biggest fan, but I understand why we've got it.
I love it. I think it's great. Keep it going. Just need more cameras.
Just need more cameras. That's it. More cameras. More money. More games. Just get us at the house and watch football.
Exactly.
Big men are up from the back. El Mahani, right foot. Website. Oh, jeezy peeps, man.
It's so funny. When I was in Saudi doing the games, we obviously had VAR, and I was producing the world feed. So I wasn't really kind of doing too much during the game. The guy doing the replays, there was a penalty and he put out a bunch of angles, put like four angles out or whatever. And then VAR were looking at one particular angle that he hadn't put out. And I was just like, mate, camera 12 or whatever it was. So that's what VAR's looking at. And then they ended up giving the decision.
Oh, shit.
Which, no, it's fine, because it actually helps.
Oh,
in
okay.
The sense of like, right, so the penalty goes in, you do your replays of your penalty, and then you would do a replay of the decision of the angle. Because the other aspect as well is that you can broadcast the VAR output live. Mm-hmm. So what the referee's looking at and stuff like that. So it's just like,
yeah.
It is a little, if you're like the VT cord or whatever, it's a bit of a, oh fuck, I didn't put out the best angle.
I wasn't even thinking angle. Of it. Like, I've never made that connection that it's not the same footage. But is it literally the same camera that's providing it?
It's the same camera. So I mean, what is it? For all the Scottish games, the six cameras will be the only cameras. VAR right, won't so have right. VAR won't have different cameras.
I was thinking they'll have less, no. not more. No. Okay, so it'll be the same, right?
Yeah, and even if it's Sky, which will come with more cameras, like maybe 14 to 16 cameras, especially if it's at Celtic or Rangers, VAR will have that access as well.
Have you ever been in a broadcast, Andrew, where you are watching pictures come in and you're just like, how are they not looking at it from this angle? That's clearly the best one. But obviously, it's you because you're seeing the feed come in with all cameras live at the same time. Is that ever a thing that you've had in a broadcast?
No.
No.
Sorry, you gave it a big delivery and I was just like, no, not really.
I was just curious if you were privy to anything else, kind of, or the decision-making process, you can hear the mics or anything else that a regular punter watching on TNT or Sky can't hear about the decision-making progress. Are you privy to any of that part of the process more than anybody else?
Normally, there's a few, depends sometimes on what the spec you're working towards or, you know, just what's delivered sometimes. So when VAR first came in, I think there was an output of VAR that you could see if VAR were looking or checking something. I think commentary and match trucks, it became like a red button and a green button sometimes if they were checking something or whatever. So that then the commentators would know and stuff like that. That's going a while back now. But going back to your last question, I do remember now doing the Saudi Pro League. I was World Feed producing, and there was one like penalty incident where I think there was a penalty incident and a couple of replays went out, but VAR were looking at a different camera, which kind of nailed it. So it was one of those where the penalty ended up being given. And then after, so it can be helpful to like a match production as well when they realize like, oh, well, that's because at the end of the day, when you're in that position, you can normally just spit out the output of VAR so that then the viewers are all seeing what VAR are looking at, which is the most important aspect because that's when the referees, that's what they're basing their information from is what VAR are providing the referee on the pitch rather than what the match truck is providing to the viewer. So we spit that out. And then that's how they make the decision. But it then can help us as well. Be like, well, that's the angle that they based their decision upon. So then once we rolled out all the replays of the penalty, we could go back and go, and this is why. So things like that can happen sometimes too.
I always think about the editor that must be sitting in with them as well, because I'm presuming it's not the referees that are sitting there with a fast forward rewind button, clipping things out or whatever. Surely they've got like a wee edit guy that's doing all the bits for them where they say, can you clip this out? Can you do that?
They've got the replay operator, haven't they?
Yeah. They'll have an EVS op or whatever software they use and unit they use. They'll have someone there, but they'll be trained on it. I don't know of any like professional EVS ops who would do normal match replays for Sky, TNT or BBC or whatever that do that. I think they have to be like staff kind of trained people to like go between all the angles and stuff like that. That was me going between the angles.
And I can confirm that when you work at a club, you are completely in the dark and you get exactly the same access and information as anyone in the stands.
So you feel more like a fan as well.
It is just as frustrating and just as rubbish as if you were a supporter.
Especially if you had the angle, Laura, which side?
Yeah, I thought that was quite interesting when Des was saying that sometimes when clubs send in their own angles to appeal decisions and they won't get considered, which is quite interesting because there was a lot of times after games at Motherwell where we'd analyse different angles that we had from behind the goals and GoPro positions and stuff, and it would be included in appeals. If we were going to appeal something as a club, of course you'd cut it up and put it in and you'd slow-mo it down and you'd zoom in and everything. So it's interesting to know that that's not always accepted.
Any broadcasted match as well, like the clubs will get the footage from the broadcaster as well. So, and they'll, I know like from Championship and below, we don't have VAR. It's really important to those clubs because then they can use that footage. It's harder when it's just a single camera, but sometimes they'll ask for it and they'll be like, did you get that angle or whatever?
When you were sending in, you know, appeals or compilations or anything. Did you add any like intense dramatic music to your edits, Laura? Did you put like Time by Hans Zimmer underneath, just being like, come on now, you've got to be looking
that
at this.
That would have been quite something. I wish I had done that now.
And make it like all TikTok style with some weird graphics. People like coming in going like, oh my God.
Little flames coming out the ankles as he's running.
Okay, another podcast done. Another week of Scottish football done. Thanks to Laura, thanks to Finn, and thanks to Des Roach. Scotland have qualified. That's done. We are now done. So you should go and listen to something else. Thank you. Goodbye. Good night. Good evening. Bye.